Girl, I gotta tell you about a new podcast I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
All right, it's called Kenan and Lakin Give You Deja Vu. It's a new rewatch podcast of the iconic 90s sitcom and TGIF mainstay Step by Step, which I was obsessed with.
Same. So Stacey Keenan, who played smart and snarky oldest stepsister Dana.
And who is a fan of TCO.
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl.
And Christine Lakin, who played tough and confident younger sister Al, they're your hosts.
Yes. So while Lakin, I don't like calling them by their last names, but while Lakin was a fan and watched every episode of the show, Stacey Keenan is watching for the first time.
Yeah, so now we get to join these lifelong friends and TV stepsisters for a juicy peek behind the scenes as they explore what it was like to come of age in front of the cameras on a hit network TV show in the pre-internet, pre-cell phone, but peak scrunchie yes. era of appointment television.
So whether you were a fan of the show back then or discovering it anew, for sweet 90s nostalgia, breakdowns of classic 90s looks, and plenty of laughs, let Keenan and Lakin give you deja vu.
Yeah, it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. You know where to find
podcasts. Also, like, in my cell phone, because they're our best friends now.
Oh my God, I love it.
Well, it started out warm today, now it's cold. So, are you happy?
It's like a torrential downpour outside. Everything's
we'll
great.
See. Okay, great. Thank you
What's
for that. The no, problem. No problem over here. Hi, Jillian Benzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Fam, do me a favor, join us over on the Patreon if you want to have, I don't know, maybe 400 full ad-free bonus episodes.
Wow. Yeah, give or take.
Give
I
or
mean,
take.
I mean, ad-free versions of these episodes plus like our series, like we're doing the Natalia Grace thing.
Yes.
And all that.
Twin Flames.
Twin Flames.
What's the other crazy one that we just were like, we have to add this?
Oh, we're doing Quiet on Set, of course.
Quiet
obviously.
On Set, absolutely.
I've already watched it twice.
We just did the Cult of Mother God, like that wild,
yeah,
wild
love
ride.
Has won.
The other thing, too, fam, we're doing virtual events. We're doing virtual happy hours over there, and we're doing drag bingo once a month.
Yeah.
We just had our last drag bingo with the amazing Schwa. It was
Schwa's
wild.
The best.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Also, join the Facebook group because that's where you're going to meet like over 51,000 fellow TCO wow. listeners just like hanging out and connecting and like having a great time.
You're throwing so many numbers at me. 400, 51,000. Wow. I was told there's going to be no math on
no
this.
No math. Girl, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about Chowchilla. It is on Max. It's a town in Central California.
Chowchilla was a wonderful place to grow up.
We were little innocent children.
Never did I think that something like this could happen.
How does a school bus show up missing?
I did not want to go down there.
It was like somebody just took them up off the planet.
Was it a thrill crime?
Your guess is as good as mine.
It was a mystery. You had no answers.
They recovered a journal encrypted in unusual writing.
Never seen anything like that.
The kidnappers hit this town right in its heart by taking those children.
All the way through, they thought that they had thought of everything.
And we're being buried alive. And I thought to myself, if we're gonna die, we're gonna die getting the hell out of here.
I had never heard of this case. Did you know about this?
I had heard about it and only very peripherally, where it was just like the largest kidnapping. And I'm like, I can't, I'm too scared to learn more about it. It sounds...
There were moments, I was texting you watching this. There were moments where I couldn't breathe.
I know, it's crazy.
It is absolutely, I'm going to say up front, everybody lives.
Everyone's fine.
Everyone lives.
Yeah.
And I needed to know that going in. Because what happens to these kids is very, very scary.
Yes.
So Chowchilla is a town in Central California. It's a very small, like, you know, classic. American town.
Small town USA, they say.
The main industry is cattle and farming. Each year they have a cattle drive through the center of town, and I thought Daisy would love that. It's just a bunch of cows walking down Main Street.
Lots of cattle, lots of farming.
Are you amazed by, like, cows?
Yeah.
Me too.
They're really nice. They like music.
Yeah. How do you know?
Videos, TikTok.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They like music.
They
do they
like
have a
music.
Particular kind that they like?
No, I think classical.
Okay, great. They're very smart.
They're very, very smart.
They're very, they've got great taste.
They're really sweet, actually.
Oh, my God. Well, we meet Mike Marshall, and I want to say right now, Mike Marshall is the hero of this whole goddamn thing.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that this story is told by many of the kids who experienced this. Not all of them, but
yes.
many of them. I think there were 26 of them total. Many of them are here. Mike Marshall was 14 years old when this happened.
My dad was a world champion steer wrestler. I was raised right, really, to believe in God and cowboy. At an early age, I knew I wanted to be a rodeo cowboy like my dad and his friends.
Just be more like Mike Marshall. And
yes.
We'll learn, like, he has some of these statements, and I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
I will keep digging Mike Marshall. I will live to see another day.
He's amazing. His dad was a steer wrestler. I wrote whatever the hell that is.
Oh, it's like, fight. It's like, you know, a steer is like a cow.
And it's like the rodeo stuff that
it's
we don't like.
It's the stuff
like,
that I don't
right?
love.
No, I'm with
is,
you.
I stand by Mike Marshall. On this.
Me too. He says he was raised right to believe in God and cowboy. We also meet Jennifer. She'll be with us throughout. You know, she describes the town as like a place where like kids grew up playing in irrigation ditches.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds weird. But then I remembered when I was a kid, we had like a hill. I grew up in this like Section 8 housing called Swan Pond Village, which mm-hmm. was like a little village of like low income housing. It was a lovely growing up.
Yeah.
And there was like ditches all over the place that during like the summer would fill with water and we'd go swimming in them.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that now?
Can
you imagine little chubby me with those Coke bottle thick glasses
cute.
And my little mullet just
adorable.
Rolling around in a ditch full
happy,
of muddy water.
As happy as a clam, as my mom would say. Not
nice
a,
of you
not
to say clam. Very nice of you not to say like pig and shit or something.
Happy as a clam is a phrase.
Absolutely.
It is.
I know it.
Okay.
I know it. It was just nice of you to go with the smaller of the animals.
I grew up hearing as happy as a clam, so that's what
great.
We're going with.
Perfect.
My
perfect,
mom's not
perfect.
Really a pig and shit kind of gal. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, Jennifer was 9 at the time. Larry Park is here. He was also 9.
Oof, Larry really goes through it.
Like, yeah, they all do, these kids.
They definitely do. And we get what's amazing about this documentary is that this tragic thing happens to them when they're very young, but we're seeing them now when they're old. They're like a lot, some of them are like old. And they're like, we're seeing that they've like lived like all of the life that they've lived and the trauma that they've suffered, but then how they all like overcame.
Yeah, like so
it's
much
kind
of this.
Amazing.
Yeah, we meet Lenore. She's a psychiatry specialist focusing in this case and child and adolescent.
That's a really important point. She's not just a doctor who's a talking head who's here. She became interested in, she says it later somewhere. She says,
while I was in training as a child psychiatrist, and I wanted to find out what happens to children who get frightened to death and don't die. And that started the Chowchilla study.
And she wanted specifically to study these kids.
Yeah. And what I love about this documentary is that, like, it's we're learning about the case, but then the aftermath of it.
Yes.
Like, they had to live with this trauma, and there's suffering,
yes.
even though they're all, like, physically okay.
Oh, don't
we'll
even get me
into
started.
The difference of all of that. But, yeah, so they're all here.
Yeah. Girl, ZipRecruiter is back. Give them the anecdote about why you got to move quickly when you want something.
Okay, so when you were buying, I don't know, like the Eras Tour tickets, for
yeah.
example, like I was winning the great battle of Ticketmaster, I was
right.
sitting there literally seeing tickets disappear before my eyes. And it's
yes.
like, oh no, someone got to you before then. You have to act fast in this life, people.
That's the whole thing. When you want the best, you got to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. This applies also to the art of finding the perfect people to hire.
Yeah, because think of those tickets like the most talented people for your open
yeah.
jobs, and then someone else is scooping them up.
Yes, I see what you did there. Imagine if somebody else got Natalie or something.
Like, never.
Can you imagine?
So the best way to do that is with ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast.
And fam, right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TCO.
Yeah, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles.
Immediately after you post the job, fam, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. I cannot tell you
best.
How hard it is to wade through the resumes. We used to do that back in the day. Then we started using ZipRecruiter,
yeah.
and it changed our lives.
They're doing all the work for you.
Doing all the work for us.
Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast.
See why 4 out of 5 employers, including us right here, who post on ZipRecruiter, get a quality candidate within the first day. That is true. That happened to us.
Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/TCO.
Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/TCO.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And then, like, get back to your day.
Right. And, like, good luck with getting tickets to whatever you want. It's
totally.
So stressful. I wish everything could be more like ZipRecruiter, honestly. So it's Thursday, July 15th, 1976. Ed Ray was the bus driver. He was bucking his own hay, but he was so kind.
What
I Googled.
Does it mean to buck your own hay?
And it means like self-employed.
Oh.
And maybe not in the most glamorous.
Okay. So it's a turn of phrase. I thought he was like a farmer who bucked his own hay.
Well, that's where it came from. According to Google, I learned about this 5 minutes ago.
I don't know what bucking anything means.
But it means when you're bucking your own hay, you're just like, like hoisting it by herself.
Yep.
So it just meant to say, like, the guy was on his own. He was doing his own thing.
Yeah, good for him. His son Glenn is here, and he says that, like, the thing about Ed was that he cared about all the kids. He knew them all by name. He knew all their parents.
Yeah.
Like, it's a small, tight-knit community, I think is what they're getting at here.
Yeah, so it's summer school, right? So the kids are all loaded onto the bus, and the kids are being kids. They're talking, they're yelling, they're not in their seats, they're hyper. It's chaos down here, Tom.
And I want to point out Mike, the one that we said is, like, the hero here. He's 14 years old. He's not usually on the bus because his mom usually picks him up. But the day before the kidnapping, he says to us, quote, he's 14.
I remember mom would come get me every day at noon all summer. And the day before the kidnapping, I got into my mom's beer and tried to make some popcorn, almost burnt the house. She walked in and said, okay, Mike, well, your punishment is, you're going to have to ride the bus home tomorrow.
You have to be on the bus with all the 9-year-olds.
Exactly.
Deal with
and
it.
That day, as the bus is getting loaded up, Mike is out, quote, in the orchard messing around with the teacher's daughter. Mike. Mike. Like, 14-year-old Mike is a real worldly little guy.
Mike was like cool guy Mike.
Absolutely.
Right? We learned that, like, all the girls had crushes on him. He was like a cowboy. He was really cool.
He was. Yeah.
So it's 3:54 p.m. Everything's going fine.
Yeah.
Kids are getting dropped off along the way.
That is the thing that really, I didn't get that until the second time I watched it. This was not like the bus got picked up all the, like, kids got off the bus before the other kids got kidnapped.
Everything was normal.
Yeah.
Like, everything was going the way it
should.
Some
kids, like, by the skin of their teeth did not live through this hell.
Right. So Ed, the bus driver, turns a corner and then he stops. And we are hearing the story from audio from the kids when they were 9, 10, 12, 14 years old. The bus stops and a white van pulls up and two guys jump out with guns and tell Ed the driver to open the door.
Yes.
These two men are now on the bus.
And they have pantyhose covering their faces, which I remember this shit from Unsolved Mysteries when, like, that's how people in Unsolved Mysteries always rob banks.
Yeah.
It is so terrifying.
It's
looking.
A very scary look. It totally distorts your face. It's very weird.
Yes. And Larry, who is the one that we said, like, really goes through it, he's a very religious kid. And he's saying that, like, the way the pantyhose are pulled against their eyes make their eyes look hollow. Like demons.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
So they have guns and they tell Ed, the bus driver, to go to the back of the bus. They tell the kids to all do the same.
Yeah.
They're pointing the guns at the kids and then they just start driving.
And I gotta tell you, even in the reenactments, watching these shotguns pointed at these little kids, I fucking hate it. It's just
awful. So Mike the cowboy is already trying to think ahead.
Yes.
Because he's thinking, okay, if I can figure out why they're doing this, maybe I can find a way to interrupt it.
Yes.
And so one of the bad guys drives the truck off the road and into a ditch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit. But this wasn't an accident.
No.
So they know exactly where they're going to go and how and when and why, right?
Yeah.
They drive into this ditch and there's another van.
Yes.
We now have two vans, a white van and a green van.
Yep.
One group of kids is told to get into the white van. And this is where, like, siblings and friends and cousins are getting separated.
Because you have to understand there's 26 kids plus the bus driver.
Right.
So it's a school. Like, a lot, like, you go to school with your sister, or your brother, your cousins or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the women is telling us,
we thought that they might be back there killing the guys in the bus because we didn't know what they were doing to them.
I was separated from my three sisters. Were they alive? Did they get left behind?
They don't know what's the fate of the other people that aren't on the van that they were loaded into.
Right. And the vans are lined with plywood so you can't see out.
Yes.
Right. So the kids have been split up into two vans. And I'm just like, why are they doing this? It's 4:30 p.m. The parents are worried now, obviously. The kids haven't come home yet. Everyone's calling the cops.
Yeah. I want to point out something that they don't talk about in the documentary. I had to look it up. Where they end up taking these kids is like an hour and 50 minutes away from the town where they were kidnapped.
Yeah.
So, like, they're ultimately, like, in these vans not knowing what's going to happen to them and what happened to the other kids for almost 2 hours.
Jesus.
It's fucking terrifying.
And also, like, these parents start calling because the bus should be, there's like a schedule, right?
Yes.
So it's like 4:02.
Yeah.
Mike the cowboy's not home yet or whatever. Whatever it is, like,
his
parents
mom
are waiting.
Fixed him a bacon and tomato sandwich, and I was like, am I having a BLT for lunch today?
Did you?
I didn't, but I might have one for dinner.
I was going to say, you're having one for dinner. But the whole thing is, like, how on earth does a big yellow school bus go missing?
Right.
Like, it's almost as if all of these kids and the bus vanished into thin air. It doesn't make any sense. And again, this is the 70s. There's no GPS. There is no technology we can use. It is a mystery to these people.
This is another one of those things that it took me, like, a second watching to really understand that, like, the idea of, like, these kids all being kidnapped at once is not in anyone's mind. So they cannot figure out where on earth these kids are. Like, yeah. There's the only scenario that makes any sense to anybody is that they were abducted by a UFO.
Which at some point it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because it really makes totally. No sense. How, yeah. Why is the bus gone? Where are the kids? Where yeah. is Ed, the driver, the adults? Like, it makes
no one's
no
calling
sense.
Home to say we broke down. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, they're just gone.
They're just gone, right?
Yeah.
So 5:44 p.m., 2 hours since the kidnapping.
It was hot in that van. It was just stifling.
Kids got sick from the motion of the vehicle and no food, no water. If you as a child can be thrown into the back of a van without any comforts, they didn't care about us.
They are terrified. When you're scared like that, your body is just going to start reacting.
And the kids are saying, like, it's so clear, they don't care about it. Anything could happen. That we could die back here. They don't care. We
don't
are
care.
Nothing to the people who kidnapped us.
And they're comforting each other. So
yes.
if kids are, like, wetting their pants,
yep.
instead of in any other situation, you'd be scared that you'd also be made fun of. No one is laughing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Everyone is in this together. So they're all, like, comforting each other.
They're praying and singing. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And they say nobody clapped
Jennifer
their hands.
Jennifer goes, nobody. And I was like,
I know.
Oh. Shit.
I know. And these are young kids. Like, some of these kids are as young as 4 years old.
Yeah.
Four.
And everyone is looking to Mike the cowboy because he's the oldest.
He's the oldest.
Now, but Ed the bus driver is here too.
Yeah.
And we don't hear a lot about him in this moment. The kids aren't saying that he was comforting or taking any kind of leadership
yes.
role.
They get into this more throughout. I feel for Ed because I think in his mind, and obviously Ed's no longer with us. His son Glenn is here. But I'm imagining that Ed the bus driver must be thinking, every decision I make has to be the right decision because
right.
if anything happens to any one of these kids,
right.
it's going to be my
fault.
It's
a numbers game. There are 26 kids
yes.
here,
and
plus
they're
me.
In my care. So
right.
if one of these kids gets
of
hurt,
course.
It's fucking on me. And I can imagine how crippling that would be. And Mike, as one of the kids, but the oldest of the kids, doesn't have that sense of responsibility,
right.
which gives him a little bit more freedom
yeah.
to try things,
right.
I think.
So there's these pilots. These pilots are kind of on the scene, and they're searching for the bus.
Yeah.
And they find the bus in the middle of this ditch, and it is terrifying to see.
Because the bus
and
is
no people.
Empty. Right.
So everyone knows that something is very wrong, and this is why people are like, aliens, right? Like,
right.
there's no, it's California. I don't
yeah,
know. There's no,
anything.
Like, where did they all go? Like,
yeah.
why did they vanish? I mean, it's so frightening to know there are 27 people who are just gone and the bus is here and there's no sign of them.
And just like speaking as a parent, like, you would think, you know, like, all we got to do is find the bus because if you find the bus, you're going to find the kids. But then you find the bus and the bus is empty.
And then you have 1,000 more questions.
Yeah, yeah. So now it's 9:15. It's 6 hours after the kidnapping. Mike is saying, we've been driving around for hours and they finally stop. So this is where I looked it up. It was like an hour and 45 minutes away. It was how long they were actually in the van. And so they say from inside the van, the kids hear like sawing and hammering. And I'm saying it's a fucking horror movie.
Like what?
They have no idea what these people who have kidnapped them are going to do with them.
And then they start taking the kids. Again, I want to hit it home. No one was physically abused in this. It's not like this was like a torture chamber where the guys were coming and visiting the kids. I just want to say that
yes,
here now.
Yes.
There is definitely trauma there, of course.
And the psychological trauma that we'll get into.
1,000%. Yeah. But I know I was thinking what you're thinking, dear listener.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening here.
No.
But especially because they start taking the kids one by one. So the door, a van door will fly open. They'll grab a kid, slam the door, and leave everyone terrified. And it's like, where are they taking the kids?
And Mike, the 14-year-old, says,
I felt helpless. That, to me, was one of the scariest. Because now we're going to find out what's going on.
Now we're going to find out what they're going to do with us.
So what they'd done is they'd backed the van into this tent-like thing. And it's a structure that was totally covered, so you couldn't see in or out. And there was like really, to me, it's a very weird connection that I have, but it's a really like scary outdoor lamps that you see at nighttime construction sites. Something about really bright light when everything is dark is a little unsettling.
Totally.
Even though it's meant to like, you can see.
Right,
light.
Yeah, yeah,
it just
yeah.
feels like, why is that there?
Well, and also remember, they're coming out of these vans that have been completely covered as well.
Right.
So they haven't seen daylight since they were kidnapped at like noon
right.
or whatever.
And as they're taking them out of the van, the bad guys now, they start taking inventory. Your name, your age. They're taking items of clothing. They're taking their bags, whatever they have on them.
Yep.
The youngest is 4 years old. Her name is Monica.
Yes.
And they make the kids go down a ladder into this hole in the ground.
Yeah. So like literally descending into a hole in the ground. And Larry is saying like, I saw the hole. I saw the ladder. I saw that Ed, the bus driver, was down there, and I didn't want to go down there because I knew if I went down there, I was never coming back.
And now
movie.
No, he does.
He does.
Everyone gets out. This is the part where I was watching it and I was like, I can't breathe.
I know. Ed, the bus driver, is there with a flashlight guiding them down into the hole by their ankles. Come on, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's like.
I love that your best Jillian grandpa. Come on, it'll be all right.
But it's odd because you're thinking, what is this? Who can do this? What is this underground bunker? Who are these people? Where are we going?
Yeah.
Is there something past the bunker? It's when you think about the time and effort and what it takes to build this contraption, it's like, whose hands are we in right now?
And fam, all will be revealed. You'll find out all of it. But this is where we start to learn. Once the kids are down in this crowded space, like, there's, you know, a couple of mattresses down there. There's a couple of jugs of water. They say there's a little bit of food, like cereal, peanut butter, and bread. But it is a very, very enclosed space. It is very, very small.
And this is one of the scariest things that we've ever heard in these documentaries.
Yeah.
Suddenly, they drop like a manhole cover over the hole.
That's when I started hearing that dirt. You know, and we were being covered up, buried alive, you know.
And I'm like, oh my God, they're burying them. They're burying it closed. They're making it impossible for that. Like, why are there fucking mattresses? It's not what you think. All will be revealed.
Yes. And everyone gets out.
And everyone gets out.
Oh, but I feel like I'm going to cry.
But
like, it's
hearing
so scary.
That feeling of just hearing the dirt. It's like in Kill Bill where they bury the bride and Uma Thurman is just in there. And you're like, oh my God, how the hell is she going to get out? And then it's like, fine. She figured it out with her training. But it's that feel, that sound of
they're
just
being buried alive.
Being buried
And like, this is California in the summer. It's fucking hot
down there. You're hours away.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
No one's going to find you.
No one's finding
you. And you know, the only people in the world who know where you are the people who just put you there.
Right.
And then I start to think, what if those people get killed? Then no one's ever going to find them. What if they decide to just leave? You know what I mean? No, it would be impossible to find them.
Impossible.
Yeah.
It's Friday, 10:18 a.m., 18 hours since the kidnapping. George, the journalist, is here. He heard about this over the wire machine.
Yeah, he says this is a great story for reporters, terrible story for parents.
I mean, just horrible. Yes, George. Let's focus
like,
on...
George.
But it is a major story. Local, international. It's a circus. The press comes to town. But again, everyone's like, it's got to be aliens.
Right.
Because imagine, it makes no sense. And it's the 70s, for God's sake.
If this happened today and like a school bus full of kids vanished.
They'll have their iPod, their air tags or whatever.
That's true.
Like everyone is trackable.
It's true. And thank the Lord. This is why. You know what I mean?
It's like Big Brother's watching, but.
Yeah. And then they interview the last kid that got off the bus before it disappeared. She's like 10 years old.
Had you ever seen any cars following the bus before?
No.
You have any idea who might have done that?
No.
Did you see anything after the bus let you off?
Nope.
I'm like, she is Daisy. She does not want to be talking to this reporter. She doesn't care. She doesn't know anything. Like, did you see anything? No. Do you know anything? No. Any idea what happened?
But it's also,
no.
She's a 10-year-old kid and everything was fine. Like, this pressure of just, like, all these cameras in her face and just like, what do you know? And she's like, nothing.
I
got off the bus and I had my snack and I, you know, like, nothing.
I know.
You weirdos. Like, leave the 10-year-old alone.
I know. Travel down the road back again. Girl, Chime is back. Look, I'm obsessed with Chime. Chime is a credit card that helps you build your credit. And this is the kind of thing that I really could have used when I was younger and ruining my credit all over town.
Right. So it's the Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card.
Yes.
Let me give you some facts.
Please.
Some factoids. No annual fees, interest, or credit check to apply.
Yep.
You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted.
Which is everywhere.
Which is everywhere. And you build credit using your own money.
That's the whole thing. You can also get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit through Chime.
Yeah. And they have this fee-free overdraft with SpotMe. So it's overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualifying direct deposit. All they want to do is help you out.
They also have 60,000 plus fee-free ATMs. I'm a little bit mad that I was born when I was born.
I know.
Why didn't this exist when I was in my 20s?
Listen, that's more than the top three national banks combined.
That is wild. And you can easily find a fee-free ATM near you on the Chime app, fam.
Yeah, and you can send and receive money, right? So you can use Chime to pay anyone, or they don't have to be Chime members. But they should be.
Yeah.
And you can cash out your money fee free.
So fam, with Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit score right away.
Get started today at Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
Chime feels like progress.
All right, give them the mandatory disclosures, girl.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
You know, they don't give us a lot of punctuation in that. You really always nail it every time.
Thank you. The thing is, there's a lot of punctuation because right? It's a lot of periods and comments because there are so many initials.
Totally,
but
totally.
Thank you very much. I will take the compliment. Appreciate you. The kids are now in this hole screaming and begging to be released. Ed, the bus driver, and Mike, the cowboy, start investigating.
Yes.
Most led by Mike, the cowboy. I'm sorry, no shade to Ed, but we got to be
that
honest
is the
here.
Most important thing is that, like, Mike, the 14-year-old, really is the one leading the charge. And again, just to, like, humanize Ed just a little bit.
Of course. I'm not talking shit about Ed.
Well, because there, I got some choice words for Ed later.
It's whatever. I didn't live it, so am I judging?
All I can think is, like, if you're Ed, like, can you imagine being the adult who makes the decision that gets one of your kids killed?
Of
like,
course.
Mike is just one of the kids, and he just wants to get the fuck out of there. So they start investigating.
So they're looking at the walls, and they're looking for cracks in the ceiling.
And all they have is a flashlight. Otherwise, it's pitch black in there.
Yeah, and Mike is here telling us. So, like, 14-year-old Mike, he's like, I'm trying to get any information about where we are. Like, just trying to look around. When you have nothing, you just get creative. So he's just looking and trying to take in.
And I want to like, describe the room, like, that they're in, because they said they could hear some fans blowing from the outside. It wasn't blowing in cool air, but it was blowing in air. And then those fans stopped. So now it's stiflingly hot. There had been jugs of water. The water's almost all gone.
Right.
And they don't know how long they're going to be down there. Like, all of these people in this space can think is that they're going to suffocate. They're going to starve to death. They're going to die of, you know, heat stroke or whatever.
And Larry, who's here, as he's describing, like, they're living trauma responses as the trauma's happening to them.
Yeah.
And Larry, the poor guy, he's right back there as he's talking to us about it.
Yeah.
Because the kids are literally dreaming of their homes and families.
Yes.
They're hallucinating.
They are, yes.
And we're learning that this happens when you're terrified like this. It's a little bit of disassociating. It's a little bit of you're a child.
Yeah.
It's been hours. You're in the heat. You're hungry. You're terrified. You're thirsty. You don't know. It's like the worst possible nightmare for a kid to go through. And so you just start hallucinating.
And then it gets worse.
You could hear the screeching of the metal and the roof just gave.
It was terrifying. There was dust and dirt that was flying everywhere. Thought we were gonna die right there. That's when we thought we would smother to death.
We knew we couldn't last much longer because the structure is very, very weak.
Yeah, whatever the structure is being supported by two beams, like one holding up the ceiling and one sort of holding the sides.
And then these idiots, the bad guy idiots, put dirt on top of it.
Right.
So now they're making it weaker.
Exactly.
So at first, you're kind of like, how did they build the structure? And it's like not very well. Like the more we uncover, because at first you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
This underground bunker. And it's not as like high tech as it seems.
No.
It's just terrifying.
It's just terrifying.
So it's Friday 3:10 p.m., 23 hours since the kidnapping. We have the FBI. We have the National Guard.
And we have over 100 families gathered at the police station being like, where the fuck are our kids?
And now my question is, and they didn't mention this, but like, there are no tire tracks from the vans. Two vans met this bus.
Uh-huh.
Two vans drove off from the bus.
Yeah,
there
good
was
call.
Nothing. That, and it's kind of like a desert area.
Yeah.
There's like a dirt road. Like there were no tracks to follow.
Huh, that's interesting. Because it was definitely like in a ravine off the side of the road. How did they even get the vans down there?
Or why wasn't there any, I'm not saying like you should have done that. I'm just saying like, is there a way to like hide those kinds of tracks or something? Because with two vans, I feel like there's got to be something to be like, oh, they must have gone this way. Or maybe we just didn't learn about it.
Yeah, maybe. So we're back with the kids in the structure. And they say that Ed, the bus driver, has kind of given up.
Yeah.
But Mike, the 14-year-old, is like literally like, fuck this. If we're going to die, we're going to die trying to get the hell out of here.
Because Ed, the bus driver, told the kids they're gonna die.
He literally said, like, we have to like just get down here and kick the bucket.
And Mike's like, no.
No.
Like, no.
I'm not doing that, Ed.
And he's like, I don't have that sense of hopelessness. Like, we're gonna fucking die trying. So he starts, he's like, come on, kids. Literally, kids.
Yes.
Again, he's the oldest. He's stacking the mattresses.
To get up to that manhole cover.
And these kids, it's like all the kids in Hook where they're like cheering him on. They're like, come on, Mike.
All the kids are, come on, Mike. You can do it, Mike. And I don't feel it move or see it move, but all the kids
I just heard him say, it moved, it moved.
Mike, it moved. Yeah, you're in the direction. Go, go, go. It's like beautiful to think that they were all like working so hard in this moment.
It's like a sense of hope that they desperately need.
And Mike is doing all he can. And finally, the kids are like, hey, Ed, can you give him a hand?
Literally, grown up, like, could can you go help him? The kid?
So,
right.
Yeah, I think it was Linda or Jennifer. It was like, he finally went over and helped. Anyway, Mike and Ed together get this manhole cover off. Ed pushes it up. Mike and his little 14-year-old arm puts his arm out to feel around.
Yeah.
Now, Larry says if there was a misstep, if he sneezed, if he felt a little itchy, if Ed moved at all, Mike's arm would have been
crushed.
Sliced right off.
Oh, my God. But what happens is Mike...
It's amazing. Like, it's amazing.
It's incredible. And Mike was so brave, you know?
He's like, fuck this. He's like, I'm cool guy Mike.
Yeah, I'm cool
Mike
guy Mike.
I'm Mike the cowboy. Like,
I was just making out with the teacher's kid in the orchard.
Everyone has crushes on me now. Wait till they hear about this.
So Mike is realizing that the kidnappers have put, like, the bus batteries on top of the manhole cover.
It's like, they're like 125 pounds.
And he's able to get both of them and pull them into the structure to get the manhole cover off.
So he, like, pushes these 125 batteries into the manhole that all the kids came down.
Yes.
They fall and they crash.
And so Mike gets through the manhole cover and suddenly he's now in a box. And this is going to be a little bit hard to explain, but essentially what the kidnappers have done is they put a structure in the ground, which is where they were going to put the kids. Mm-hmm. At the top of the structure, they cut a hole in the roof of this thing, and that's where the manhole cover is. And then they built a box around the manhole cover so they could put dirt on top of the box without putting dirt on top of the manhole cover.
Right.
And that's kind of what Mike has just figured out, that now the manhole cover isn't what's keeping them in from the outside. The box is what's keeping them under the dirt.
So Mike is a cowboy obsessed.
Yes.
He's digging and he's punching and he's kicking. He's using the plywood from the mattress. He's getting as creative as he can be. And he's like, we're not fucking dying down here. Like,
yes.
Ed, don't you say that again. We're not doing it.
Yes.
And he's digging in this corner of this box.
And I realized after I do that for a while, the material, rock and stuff, is falling down outside of the plywood into the hole I'm digging. I thought maybe I could get weight off the top.
He keeps digging, and he's letting the dirt kind of seep in.
Yeah, he's realizing that, like, we can't be buried under that much dirt because we were just on open air, like, a minute before we were down here.
So he's going to let the dirt come in a little.
Yes, because there can't be that much of it.
And then it'll be easier to lift,
right?
And he's focused, and he's going to get them out of there, goddammit! And he's working for hours and hours. He starts hallucinating. At one point, he literally doesn't know what was up or what was down.
And he freaks out because
He thinks he's been like digging and digging and digging, and then he hits a dead end, and it's like, no, you're digging. What you're doing is working.
Yeah.
But his brain is like, how do you even fathom this? They're starving too, by the way.
Totally. And he finally is able to get a corner of the box open, and he can see a space beyond the enclosure that they're in.
Yeah.
And he thinks he sees a person.
Yes.
And he gives up. He's like, fuck that. They're going to kill us. And he goes and sits back down. He's like, forget it. We're going to die. He thinks about it for 1 minute, and he's like, no, fuck it.
He's like, he says to himself, you're a cowboy. You're going to get on that crazy ass horse. You're going to do whatever you got to do. And I'm like, come on, Mike.
Come on, Mike.
Yes.
Come
like, on, it's Mike. A fucking Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, like, we're going to do it. And he's pulling, and he's digging, and he's pounding, and he's working so hard, and he cracks the fucking ceiling.
Yes, my God!
And I just hear, like, in my head, like, all these, like, little kids just like, like, oh, my God!
Yeah.
So he pulls, and he rips the piece of wood off, and there's sunlight and cool air.
It's the cool air is the thing that I feel like I felt the most in this moment, because even Larry is like, all of us felt, I mean, it must have been 100 degrees in that enclosure that they were in.
And Larry's like, it was the most beautiful ray of light we've ever seen. But like, and then to feel like you're close, like cool air coming in means it's not that far away.
Exactly.
And he doesn't need to dig anything or punch anything anymore.
Yep.
Like the light is there, the air is there. Like Mike, you fucking did
it. Mike, fucking 14-year-old Mike fucking saved the lives of 27 people.
Mike, the 14-year-old cowboy, cool guy Mike, like hoists himself up and fought as hard as a person possibly could have in that moment.
100%.
I was like, oh my, I watched it 10 times. I was like, oh my God.
I know. It's incredible.
He did it.
And so they pull all the 26 kids plus Ed the bus driver out.
Going up above the hole, I had no real sense where it was. You see trees. And I felt like we were in the mountains. There was nobody there.
it feels like we were in the mountains, but no one has any idea where they are.
No one is there. They're in the middle of nowhere. They're outside. They see a building.
And I'm like, are the kidnappers around the corner?
I know.
Like,
I know.
Where are they?
Right.
Now, someone, and you kind of can't miss them because it's 27 disheveled, traumatized,
totally
happy, but terrified people. And someone is just like, oh my God, you're the, I just saw you on the news. Like, where have you guys been?
Where did you come from?
You can't miss them.
You can't miss them.
A group of 26 kids and poor Ed.
Yeah.
And so the place we learn is a rock quarry. And the person sounds this rock quarry alarm.
Yes.
And all the kids and the bus driver are reported safe. And like the entire world takes a sigh of relief.
And it's so funny because this is where it takes a turn, because it immediately cuts to a press conference being given by a guy named Robert E. Burghardt or whatever. He's an FBI agent, and he's saying to the world who's been paying attention, the children have been found, they're in good shape, there's no indication of harm.
Ugh.
And that was like, that took my breath away.
Yeah.
You know, because the whole thesis of this documentary is that trauma is harm that you can't necessarily see.
Right.
And to hear just knowing what these kids are about to face, because in 1978, there was just not an understanding of what these kids, because these kids aren't beaten up and haven't been like tortured on their skin in a way that we can see. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, they're fine.
Yeah. And at first it's like, oh, thank God. At the time, I understand why they were saying that.
Yes, because they're all alive.
They're all alive.
Yes.
And like, again, you know, nothing, whatever. So now the cops, of course, need to speak to all of these kids. So they take them to a prison.
Yeah.
Because it's a, quote, secure location, and they put them in prison jumpsuits. And I'm like, my God, haven't these kids been through enough?
And not only that, the only food they're offering these kids after 28 hours is apples and milk. Can somebody order a goddamn pizza?
I know. And I got to tell you, the kids are doing great.
They are doing great. We see pictures of them that they took at that prison.
We were given inmate jumpsuits, their white jumpsuits, to wear.
All us little kids got into them, and we had rolled pants of about 10 feet. We sit there flapping our arms. We said, hey, we can fly, and we pretend like we were going to fly.
They're all smiling.
They're just happy to be going home.
They are, but I also think that the kids are feeling pressure to pretend that everything is fine.
But they also, like, trauma works in different ways. So right now, they are happy to be home.
Uh-huh.
They're happy to know, like, okay, there are no kids. I just want to see my parents. I just want to see my grandma or whoever it is.
Yeah.
Like, I do believe in that moment, they were happy to be eating those apples.
Yes, yeah.
Everyone look at Mike. He saved the day. Like, can we go home now?
Except nobody actually says that. We'll get to that.
I'm going to scream it forever.
So they're loaded on a bus, and they're taken back to Chowchilla, and it's like, there's a mob of people waiting for them. Obviously, it's like, it's been international news. It's their parents. It's the media. It's just like well-wishers and people. You know what I mean?
It's 4 a.m.
And everyone in the world is there. These kids have been awake for like a day and a half.
Well, it's 36 hours since the kidnapping.
Yeah.
It's 4:10 a.m. Everyone's there. Now, Mike, the cowboy, our hero, is talking to the reporters.
Yes.
And the school principal comes and says, all right, interview's over. Give him some rest. Let him go home and go to sleep.
Thinking he's doing the right thing for Mike. And maybe he was.
Well, I'm sure, yes. Like, get the camera out of that kid's face. But Mike today says,
there was my chance to tell the world what happened to getting out and everything. And I didn't do it. I let the grown-ups do it.
I let the grown-ups do it.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, man.
Because immediately, Ed Ray, the bus driver, is described as the hero who saved the kids.
Because he's the only adult.
He's the adult, and all the kids are alive.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And literally, as a bus driver, like, these children are in his care. The kids are all alive. Ed is the hero of the moment.
Yeah, and we'll get into more of this later.
Yeah.
Because we got to find these guys.
Because the thing is, like, the kids are at home, but they don't feel safe because the kidnappers are still out there.
Right.
Girl, Masterclass is back. I'm so excited when they sponsor us because I truly love and use Masterclass.
Yeah, so Masterclass is where you get to learn from the best in their field.
Correct.
And then you become your best too, thanks to Masterclass.
Yeah. So I've been studying writing, right? So I've taken classes from David Sedaris and Dan Brown. I just took the LeVar Burton one. Remember, he was like the Reading Rainbow actor guy?
Of course do I know LeVar Burton.
And his whole thing was about how storytelling is just about connecting and bringing people together, which has always been my thing. And like, it's easy to forget in storytelling.
Yeah, of course. So Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiation like Chris Voss.
Yes.
Or dive into your LeVar Burton or, I don't know, like Amy Poehler.
Yes.
So Amy Poehler is talking about improv principles, but not just to be funny, like how they can help you get through life without being stressed out.
I will do anything she says. Plus, fam, every new membership on Masterclass comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
Yeah.
And truly, everybody's on there. RuPaul is on there. Anna Wintour is on there.
Yeah. Search. Just search for someone. Or just like scroll and be inspired. Totally. You never know what's going to happen. So right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/TCO.
That's right. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/TCO.
Masterclass.com/TCO.
Who doesn't want to sit at LeVar Burton's feet and just soak in the knowledge?
We've been doing it since we were kids.
I know.
The more you know. Hello.
It's true.
So law enforcement goes to the site at the quarry.
And this is where we're going to see what these kids were actually housed in.
Right. And they go down to like the whole bunker nightmare fuel thing.
Yeah.
And they realize that it was a moving van that they'd buried underground.
So like the kidnappers had gone to this rock quarry, dug out a hole that would accommodate a 27-foot moving van.
Yeah.
Now, 27 feet and 27 people.
Yeah.
That is 1 foot per person for 36 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And so it said the Palo Alto Transfer and Storage Company on the van. So the cops are able to track down the two other vans at this warehouse, the white one and the green one. Because the white one and the green one like stopped the school bus and the kids were separated in the two vans.
Yeah.
We have those two vans.
Yes.
So at this warehouse, there's even more evidence.
They found a 12-gauge shotgun, which is probably the one that was used when they made the stop of the school bus.
We found lumber material, the same lumber as 2x4s that were picked up at the quarry, number of mattresses, the same mattresses that had been put into the trailer.
They also found a car that was spray painted totally black, like all even the lights and the hubcaps and the windows completely black.
It's a real thing to see.
It was odd to see,
it's
right?
It's a terrifying thing to look at because you're like, I don't know why they did that, but it was clearly for a nefarious purpose.
And also like that the spray paint is so dull. It's not like look at that black car. It looks so sleek.
No.
It's not like that.
No, it like looks like a murder car. It's a murder car. Very scary.
Right.
They also find a diary written in a code they can't read yet.
Right. So as the cops are doing their investigation, the kids are finally, now that like everything's calmed down, they're starting to deal with their trauma.
Yeah.
And they're terrified and they're unsettled. And then there's a break in the case.
Yeah, the first break in the case comes when a former employee of the rock quarry called and said that he'd made notes in a ledger they maintained during their protocol. So basically, when he worked at the quarry, he was out doing rounds and like saw some weird shit and wrote it down. And he had seen men that he didn't recognize working with a quote, cat bulldozer. I think cat's the name of the company.
Yeah.
And he noted that there were two moving vans parked on the site. Is that anything? Two moving vans? Is that anything?
It's a thing because this guy confronts one of the men with the bulldozer and the van. And his name is Frederick Newhall Woods. And Fred basically says, well, don't you know who my father is? He owns this place.
Exactly. Exactly.
His father is Henry Newhall.
Right.
He's a real piece of work and super important, apparently.
Well, he's very rich. His family's from the Bay Area. They're like a legacy gold rush family.
They made their money in the gold rush.
When the gold rush was happening in California, Henry Newhall ended up amassing a great fortune, 148,000 acres up and down the state of California. Railroad towns were named after him.
They owned Magic Mountain.
Some guy's like, hello, they owned Magic Mountain.
So I looked it up. Magic Mountain, which is like the ride at Disney World or whatever, right? Like, it's a real, based on a real thing. It's like a real, gold
Space
rush.
Mountain?
Oh.
Magic Mountain is like their own amusement park.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I was thinking Space Mountain.
That's okay.
Is Space Mountain a real thing, do you think?
Yes. I'm going to go with hard yes. Space Mountain is real, everybody.
You like, there's like a real Space Mountain we could go visit?
100%.
Okay.
Percent.
Okay, great.
Space Mountain is really heard it here first.
So anyway,
the cops have a search warrant for the Woods estate.
Yes.
Everything was super expensive in this estate, like crystal statues. They say it's littered with vehicles, but they have like antique cars.
So this is the thing. Like, I think this is really cool. These old cars, they're like old Rolls Royces, old Bentleys, military war surplus, like Jeeps and stuff. Because Fred, we're going to learn, one of the bad guys, the son of the super rich guy, has a business where he takes and refurbishes old classic cars and sells them.
Yeah.
Like, Fred, what is wrong with your life? Like, that sounds like if you're good at something like that and you have enough money to buy the old ones and refurbish, like, I don't understand why you're kidnapping kids.
That's a rich man's game for sure.
Yes.
That's like, I literally don't know what to do with myself. I'm going to buy another old Rolls Royce.
And like, fix it up and make it even fancier and sell it for more money than I bought it for.
That means you have all the time and money in the world.
But also, like, it takes a certain amount of know-how and like, what?
Sure.
A cool thing to be interested in. Why are you kidnapping children? Make it make sense.
Do you know that we will get to the bottom of that?
us?
Okay, yes, I do know.
Do
that.
I have news for you? Which is great because we very rarely get answers.
Yeah.
So it's nice to know.
Do I have news for you?
We're going to solve this thing. So this guy, Fred, one of the kidnappers.
Who's the son of the rich guy who owns the mansion.
He slept above the garages.
Yes.
Right? So they go up to his, like, living quarters, whatever. And it's a mess. Like, you could barely walk in it. It's junk. It's, like, all these old movie cameras.
Which is fucking cool.
Like, he has cool stuff.
Yeah.
But he also has the kidnapping plan in writing. It essentially says, "My big plan
for kidnapping,
by Frederick Newhall Woods.
For kidnapping children for ransom that I don't need."
They show us a screenshot. It literally says, "Plan." The first line. Okay?
And inside that, there was a jack-in-the-box bag that on the back side of it had been written the names and the ages of all of the children. But probably the most telling evidence was the ransom note that was found in that envelope.
There was also a ransom note for $5 million.
Once again, this is the son of one of the richest people in the state of California. What Mike, his mother says at one point, his family has more money than the state of California.
Yeah.
Why on earth is he kidnapping kids for ransom?
Exactly. But this guy's father, the rich guy, is very cooperative.
Yes. Wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
Get my piece of shit son out of here.
Yeah. And he's also
get like his shitty, crappy cars off my property.
And also look at James and Rick Schoenfeld. I never liked them.
Yeah.
They were always rude.
So these three are the kidnappers. It's Fred Wood, who's the son of the rich guy. But he wanted to kidnap the kids for money, for which you're saying we're going to figure out why.
Yeah.
But he knew he couldn't do it himself. So he needed to get his his smart friend to do it.
These
What's the smart
brothers.
Friend's name?
They're two brothers. So it's James and Rick Schoenfeld. James apparently is the smarty and Rick is, quote, a hanger-on.
Like, hanging on to the wrong thing, my friend.
Right.
Like,
but they're all rich.
Yes.
They're all rich.
Right, because
the
Schoenfeld's father is a foot doctor. Apparently they didn't think that we would know what a podiatrist was.
I'm like, what?
They just say foot doctor. Yeah. I'm like, that's a podiatrist. Thank you very much.
Is there like a certain specialist or is it like podiatrist is the umbrella and then everyone comes underneath
it,
right?
It's funny that like podiatry exists, but there's not like a special hand doctor. You know what I mean? Like a shoulder doctor.
Isn't there?
Is there?
There is.
Okay, great.
I think there's an everything doctor.
Okay, well then consider me schooled.
Okay, right?
I guess so.
Am I wrong?
Who
I'm
knows?
Probably wrong. So, wait, but Jennifer.
You said it with such certainty, though.
I was like, what? Is it? There's got to be like a hand specialist doctor.
And come to think of it, I actually did go to a shoulder doctor that I once found on ZocDoc, so fuck me. You know what I love? A shoulder. I'm going to really learn how to take care of a shoulder.
Shoulders are great.
They are great. But I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, to go to, like, 100 years of medical school to, like, really understand a foot.
Let me tell you, I know. You got to love it.
Well, now that we're here, butt doctors.
Yeah.
There are butt doctors.
And
God bless them.
We need them.
I am not making fun of butt doctors at all.
You got to do it.
Well, and, like, maybe they're just taking one for the team. God bless all of them. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, they don't think about the butt the way we think about the
You're
butt.
Absolutely right.
They don't see it. It's another day at the office. That's how they see it. My butt. And you're like, they're like, you're my 16th butt I've seen today, and it's not even new. Butts are like not a
thing
anymore.
Get your butt over here.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Like, literally.
Yeah, get your butt over here.
Because I have somebody else at 12:15. My 17th butt of the day. They just don't care.
I know.
It's like not a thing.
It's
like
wild.
Those are the people you don't have to be embarrassed. You can literally slip on a banana peel in their office.
Great example, GP.
And do like a whoa, like a cartoony, and like just be your most embarrassing self. Like get your own name wrong, spill coffee, like do the most 10 embarrassing things in a row, and they'll be like,
but I'm a butt doctor.
Can you drop your pants, please?
I don't care. Like, I don't
they
care.
I think they're unflappable.
Yes.
They must be.
And they're saving lives literally every single day.
Let's raise one to the butt doctors, Let's raise a glass to all you butt doctors out there.
To the butt doctors.
The boob doctors, doctors.
Absolutely.
We need you all. The penis doctors. The hand doctors. You're all on the right level. Thanks for saving lives.
Can you think of any other organs?
I can think yes. Mm-hmm. Nose doctor. My ENT guy saved my life. Are you kidding? I used to get sinus infections. Now I don't. I can sleep. I can breathe.
God, this is a good podcast.
Doctors are good, man.
We make a good show.
We're no butt doctors, though. Those people are saving lives.
I know.
We're running our mouths.
That's absolutely true.
Choices were made.
Anyway.
So Jennifer, 9-year-old Jennifer is on the news.
Yes.
And they can't, like, get these cameras out of these kids' faces.
I know.
Also, they're 9 years old.
I know.
But someone's like, Jennifer, why do you think these rich men would do this? And she's like, because they didn't have enough love in their lives. I don't know. I'm hungry. Where's my snack?
I know.
They're like, Jennifer, yes.
I love her. Get this. These fucking idiots, these three kidnappers, they learn that the children have freed themselves and they take the fuck off.
They run. Of course they run.
So Fred, the son of the rich kid, goes to Vancouver. He used a fake ID to get in. He checked into a hotel and he's writing letters to his friends asking for money. The guy we're going to find out.
Asking for money.
He's worth $100 million in 1978 money. Yeah. That's like 80 kajillion brillion dollars in today money.
Right.
Jim
Schoenfeld drove his car up to the border and tried to enter the border. He had weapons in the car, but they didn't arrest him. They bought him a soda. They were nice to him.
Gave him the guns back and turned him around.
They give him his gun back and they send him back to America.
So Rick, the hanger-on, yeah, turns himself in.
Yes.
James also eventually turns himself in.
After a second attempt to get into Canada where they're, right, like, you still got that one gun, girl. We're not letting you, right, in here. And he then turns back around to go back to America. Right. And he's like, I'm just going straight to the police station.
And also, as he's driving to the police station, he's waving a Fred who's trying to, who gets arrested at the Canadian border.
Yes.
All three of these bozos are arrested. And the entire town fucking hates these guys. It's one of those things where there's like snipers on the, yes, roof of the building
to
next to the Purple.
The bad guys.
Because they kidnapped 27 kids and Ed, the bus driver.
Yes.
So here's the motive. It is fucking ridiculous.
Yes.
It's all about money, yep, which is insane because they're so beyond rich.
It doesn't make... So, like, Fred, the son of the really rich one, is saying, like, I wanted to just refurbish my cars and not have to live on my family's money, so I needed a sweet $5 million to just really set me up for that.
So... they write a script,
I know,
called Chain Reaction. It's like part,
it's like a movie. It's a movie script.
Right. Part Patty Hearst kidnapping, yeah, part French Connection, part Dirty Harry.
Yes.
To the surprise of no one, the movie didn't go anywhere. Like, sometimes a script is so,
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, yeah. 20th Century Fox didn't greenlight it, you're,
like,
saying?
They didn't. We're not living in the time of where Jennifer Lopez can just throw money at things and make things happen. This, yep, is 1978.
Yes.
So, meanwhile, they learn. So, no one's interested in their stupid movie.
Yes.
Even all the money in the world can't make heads turn. That's how bad the script is.
During this time, they also learned that the state had a surplus of funds. So they tried to think of how can we get ransom from the state. So then that led them to kidnapping a school bus because the state runs the school system.
They kidnapped the school bus to get money from the state because the state runs the school system.
It's so asinine. Now, not to go back to the butt doctors.
Sure.
Just asinine.
Just like it. Now, at the end of a movie called Dirty Harry,
yeah,
someone...
It's a classic film.
Right. But I'm gonna give you some very insufferable GP facts here.
Oh, no.
And at the end of Dirty Harry, like, someone kidnaps a bus full of school children,
yes,
and ends up in a rock quarry.
Yes.
Now, a GP note, this is insufferable. I'm sorry. You can just hit fast forward. Just it'll get you 30 seconds ahead. Dirty Harry came out in 1971, like, in the middle of the Zodiac case.
Oh, is that right?
It was made while it was happening, kind of.
Oh.
So the killer in the movie is named Scorpio.
He's
writing letter. It's based on Zodiac.
Oh.
The real Zodiac.
I didn't know that. This,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
not insufferable. If you skipped ahead, go back.
If you watched it, it's like, they're literally, I mean, they go to see Dirty Harry in the Zodiac movie that Fincher wrote.
Stop it!
And Mark Ruffalo's like, kid, they're already making movies about it. Like, we're not getting to the bottom of this.
Hey, Tom, can we get like 3 seconds of just plain silence here? Hi, fam. If you skipped ahead because you thought it was going to be insufferable, go back and listen. Jillian just dropped some fucking 1970s Zodiac film truth bombs on us.
But here's the biggest bomb. The real Zodiac threatened to blow up a school bus.
Yes, I was thinking that the whole time.
So that's where Dirty Harry got it from.
Yeah.
And now these guys are getting it from Dirty Harry.
Can I ask you a favor?
Sure.
You're never allowed to say that your, like, smart facts are insufferable because they're so fascinating.
Oh, plenty of people will do it for me.
Yeah, exactly. Leave it to them. Leave it to them.
No problem. Okay, thanks.
Traveled down the road and back again. Girl, Talkspace is back. Look, everybody gets a little bit down sometime. My therapist has been on vacation for 3 weeks. I had my first session on Friday. I need it, girl.
It's got to be a double, right?
It's going to be a double.
The thing is, even if you're not feeling down, sometimes you're just too in your head,
yep,
and you just need to, like, talk it out. That's another thing. People are like, well, I don't feel sad. It's not about being sad.
No, it's not just about being sad. It's also about convenience. The hardest part about traditional therapy is, like, the hour it takes you to get there, the hour it takes you to get to
work.
It's your whole day. With Talkspace, space, you can have convenient virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your own home.
Yeah, and more to the convenience point.
Please.
You can send messages to your therapist, so you don't have to wait. If something's on your mind, if you're going 3 weeks, for example, if you're on vacation you just want to send a message, you have the ability to do that.
Yep. Talkspace is also secure and private, using the latest end-to-end bank-grade encryption technology to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations.
Yeah, and it's affordable and it's in-network with most major insurers.
So fam, as a listener of TCO, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/TCO and enter promo code SPACE80.
Wow. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/TCO and enter promo code SPACE80 to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show.
That's Talkspace.com/TCO, promo code SPACE80. Just do it.
Yeah.
You'll be glad that you're talking to somebody who's not, like, your best friend.
Talk it out.
Yeah, talk it out.
It's okay.
You're going to feel great.
So this was their major plan, stealing from the movies to make a movie. They wrote it all in code, but it's like, it literally says, like, here's my big kidnapping plan, XOXO Fred.
Remember, like, that diary that they found that was written in code? Because, like, the Zodiac also wrote in ciphers.
Exactly.
But, like, it was, I mean, we see the diary, and it's pretty intricately, like, written.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean?
But next to that, it was, like, my big plan by Fred.
Right. Like, it wasn't poetry.
So, all right.
Even the Zodiac was like, this is the Zodiac speaking.
Goodbye. So
then
they
like, so scary.
I know, it's terrifying. So they like built this bunker and they get all the weapons. But here's the thing, their big plan is that they wanted $5 million from the state because of the budget surplus and the kids and in charge of the state. Here, I'm sure you're wondering, dear listener, because I'm sure you've pulled over like an hour ago. Okay, like ring, ring. Why didn't these people make the ransom call so they can get the $5 million? Why were these kids in a bunker for 36 hours?
Yeah.
All the way through, they thought that they had thought of everything.
But the night of the kidnapping, they weren't able to call in their ransom demand because the phone lines were so jammed.
It's because a school bus carrying 27 kids disappeared into thin air and aliens were the best running theory.
Yeah.
The lines were clogged.
They
couldn't get through.
They couldn't get through to make their own ransom call because the lines were clogged. And just one more thing to tie up.
Can we please slow down on that for two seconds?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The big plant, when you look back, that's why they only had water for a little bit of time. The whole plan was to keep the kids alive. The plan was never to hurt the kids.
No.
The plan was to hide the kids and get money from the state.
The plan was to never physically hurt the kids.
That's what I mean. Like, in their minds, we're not hurting the kids.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's like there's water for a little bit. They thought this was all going to be done by dinner time.
Exactly. So one note I want to say, the plan to receive the $5 million was that it was going to be airlifted to like the San Jose desert or whatever. They were going to, like, a helicopter was going to drop it.
That's not how this shit works, you fucking idiots.
But that's what that blacked out Cadillac was for. They wanted to drive that Cadillac into the desert in the middle of the night with it painted pitch black so people wouldn't
how
see it.
How are you going to see through it, you dummy? How are you going to drive it?
I gotta say, I can't really, like, I did.
What?
We got it. That's my favorite thing.
You're just not thinking ahead. You gotta play chess, not checkers every once in a while. Or don't.
I know. Stay stupid. I just don't know that anybody would have thought, like, oh God, all the lines are gonna be jammed. We won't be able to make the ransom call.
You know what I mean? But then don't disappear a school, like 27 kids and their bus. You know what I mean?
Don't even start.
The point was they were gonna, like, give it a day or two to calm down.
Yeah.
But Cowboy Mike ruined that plan.
Exactly.
Because he literally fought their way out.
Yep. Oh my God.
So, but remember, Ray, the bus driver, is the big soul hero.
Yes.
They have Ed Ray Day, a parade, a big celebration.
Chowchilla is really trying to celebrate these kids being alive and safe and sound.
Great.
And, like, and this is where I've got notes for Ed Ray, because everyone goes out of their way to say, look, Ed didn't ask for this attention. Mm-hmm. He was a very soft-spoken guy. He was just, like, saying thank you. Like, he
didn't say, I'm the hero, but he also didn't correct
anybody. He never said, like, I was the one who literally told this, like, little room full of 8-year-olds that we all just have to kick the bucket now. And Mike, the 14-year-old, is the one who dug our fucking way out of there. He never gives it up to Mike ever.
And not even, it's like, hey, get over here, you little whippersnapper.
Exactly.
Like, none of that.
Exactly.
But all the kids are like, Cowboy Mike did it. Like, cool guy Mike. Like, you late. Like, we all have crushes on him now.
I
like,
know.
Oh my God.
And
we
no one's did. Listening to them.
They say no one's listening. It's like, can we have to, we will get into this more with Quiet on Set, but can we, yeah. we have to listen to kids.
100%.
Like, they lived it. They were there. Can you listen to what they're saying to you?
Yeah.
Listen to them.
This is where we get just like the aftermath, the trauma that these kids suffer. Because again, like, no, they weren't tortured physically. They weren't beaten. But like, the torture was all like internalized trauma.
Of course it was.
And you know, all of the kids are having nightmares. Like, we get this horrible story where Larry is saying, like, he and his sister were both on the bus and they were both kidnapped and they were having nightmares, screaming, yeah. waking up in the middle of the night.
Mom and Dad were told not to come in when we have nightmares. They said that if they are going in when we have nightmares, that they are rewarding our behavior of having the nightmares. And if they stop rewarding the behaviors, we'll stop having nightmares.
And if you stop rewarding the behavior, the nightmares will stop. But the nightmares never stop.
Right.
Jennifer says she can't ever sleep again because she can't stop thinking about what could have happened.
Right.
That really hit me, that like, it's not just the trauma they actually suffered. It's the trauma yeah. of the always living in that space and not knowing what's going to happen.
The what if. Or even just hearing, like, anything can sound like the dirt.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, being piled on. Anything, like some scratch on the wall, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yep.
I mean, when you're a kid, and our brains aren't developed until we're, what, 25?
At least. I'm 45, my brain's not developed.
You're like, so close.
Thank you so much.
We got to get to one of those brain doctors and figure it out. So, like, these kids are just, it's 36 hours of true terror from
yes.
the minute that bus was pulled over.
Yes.
Until, and then the high energy and not eating. They were just like, they were living in it, right? But the school didn't offer any help.
No.
There was no counseling offered to them. Mike's mom is like, these kids were totally forgotten. Their big solution was to take them to Disneyland. And I'm like, yeah, let's take the kids who just were in like this traumatizing, isolating, terrifying,
yeah.
let's send them to a massive theme park with tons of loud noises
exactly.
and a lot of people and people screaming.
And it's like people trying to do the right thing. Like, Dr. Lenore is here. We talked
she's
about her
back.
At the top of the episode. She literally, I want to say again, she's not just a doctor talking head. She studied these kids.
It's called the Chowchilla study.
Yes. And she was saying, like, in 1976, the expression childhood trauma existed, but nobody really knew what it was. And this is where she says the thing about wanting to study the effects of kids who were scared to death but then didn't die.
Yeah.
And she went to Chowchilla to basically save these kids. Mike's mom is like, Dr. Lenore was the only person who helped us.
Because what happened to these kids is her research. She spoke to them, but what she did that no one else was doing, she listened to them.
Yes.
That's it.
Because she was saying that, like, experts were predicting that one out of the 26 kids that suffered this trauma would have problems.
But what happened was that no parent wanted to admit that his kid was the one in 26. By the time I got out there, 100% of those kids were having problems.
100% of the kids were all suffering.
Right, because no one was listening to them. Their parents were told to ignore them. And
yep.
also, like, no one knows how to handle this. And no, everyone wants to, like, oh, no, it's handled.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, working through it together. And it's like, we're never going to learn.
And the thing about Dr. Lenore, which is sad to say, is that she was there to learn from these kids for when things like this happen in the future. She wasn't even really able to help them in real time
right.
either.
Right.
But, like, the silver lining is that we were able to, like, learn things from
yeah.
the trauma that these kids suffered. We'll get to that at the end.
Yeah, but I do think it is valuable that at least they were heard by her.
100%.
You know, like, yeah. She was going to say, like, no, you should not be ignored when you're having night terrors
yes.
or whatever.
Yes.
So these idiots, all the kidnappers plead guilty, obviously.
Thank God.
So it's July 25th, 1977. Now, this is where the lawyers start arguing about the damage the kids sustained.
Yes. And thank God for this prosecutor, because he's like, look, yes, the kids weren't burned. They weren't beaten, but they were, you know, they were in conditions of total darkness. They had no food or water. There was complete panic among the kids. And he says that should be enough to constitute bodily harm, even if you don't have broken bones.
Right.
Because bodily harm is the benchmark for what kind of sentence these men are going to get.
Right, which we should not be.
No.
But it
is. Or bodily harm should encompass the entire body, including your psyche.
Exactly. So the kids are testifying about this. These kids are incredible because the kidnappers are there.
Yeah.
And they are testifying about what happened and why it counts.
Right.
Like,
why
it counts. Like,
their
just,
trauma counts as bodily harm.
You know, and like yeah. forcing them to do something that people can see. It's
yes.
like, oh, if Jen Jennifer doesn't cry enough on the stand as she's testifying in front of her kidnappers, like,
right.
you're not going to believe her?
Or it's like, well, okay, so, like, one of the kids starts cutting themselves years later or dies by suicide. Does it count then?
Like, when does it count?
You know?
Dummies.
So the kidnappers all get life without the possibility of parole.
Finding out that my kidnappers got life without the possibility of parole was exactly what we had hoped for.
But just when survivors felt that they can find some sort of peace with it, the kidnappers file appeals.
But the kidnappers appeal. Now, you have to remember, all of the kidnappers come from families with a ton of money. Mm-hmm. They have endless resources. They can hire the best attorneys. And in 1980, an appellate court reverses the sentence. They will be eligible for parole after 25 years.
And the argument is that mental harm is not bodily harm.
Right.
Like this, we live in a world now where it's if you don't believe that, like, not all injuries can be seen, then you're wrong.
Yes.
Like, you have to try to put yourself back. I know you're enraged listening to it.
Yeah.
But that back then, making the argument that there's an injury on you that people can't see
yep.
seemed as realistic as aliens coming down and getting these kids out of the bus.
Think about it this way. This was a half century ago.
Like,
it's weird because we have so much video footage and it seems like of our time, but yeah. it's not. Like, it was that, it has taken us 50 years to get to a point where we recognize that, like, bodily yeah. injury can't always be
or
seen.
Or we can even voice it yeah. in a way that sounds maybe a little productive, but it's still, like, an argument.
We just were talking about this in the Lost Women of Highway 20
yeah.
with the survivors of that serial killer,
yeah.
you know, and the torture that was inflicted upon their body, but then also how they carried the mental anguish with them for the lifetime.
It sticks with you forever.
Forever.
When you go through something traumatizing. And then, like, if something else happens to you, your body unearths other things that happen, and
yes.
then it's like, great, now I have to deal with this.
Yeah.
So it happens all, and like, no one sees that.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me right now, I'm on TikTok right now, you don't see that.
Exactly.
But it's fucking there.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has it.
Yeah.
And Jennifer, she was 9 years old at the time. She was the one where she was like, maybe they weren't loved enough on the news when she
yes,
was nine.
I love
Jennifer's
Jennifer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So Jennifer explains, like, how hard the aftermath was.
That small town became so suffocating for me that I couldn't go to school without stairs. I couldn't go to school without people talking behind my back. I couldn't go to school without somebody saying, I am so sorry.
And it's a constant reminder and re-traumatization every single day.
And sort of forcing her to react to this,
yes.
to your big reaction to her.
Yeah.
Or just like, there's that little girl who was. And then on top of that, a few years later, her brother dies in a tragic accident.
Her brother who was with her down in the bunker.
So all her eyes are on the family again with all of this tragedy. It's like tragedy porn.
Yes, and like the media is back on them. And she says, like, she was in high school at this point and, you know, she was a class officer. She was a cheerleader.
Her parents get divorced.
Yeah. And she says her and her mom decided they were going to give it all up to go anywhere else and be a nobody.
And
all she wanted was to go somewhere where nobody knew her name.
And she leaves.
Yeah.
So Mike the cowboy, our hero, he's here to tell us that by like 19 or 20, he was getting blackout drunk every single night because he says, I just didn't want to remember it anymore. I
yeah.
wanted the memories to go away. And that's how some people choose to self-medicate. It happens all the time.
It's also like he's dealing with the fact that his contribution to saving the kids was never acknowledged, but he's not dealing with that. He's dealing with the guilt he feels about feeling some kind of way
sure.
about that. You know what I mean?
He fought.
Yes.
He fought.
They would
so
be dead
hard.
Without him. They would all be dead.
Like, if you really just think about physically with his hands,
yes.
he dug them out
yeah.
and he was using plywood from a mattress to bang the wall. Like, he physically, a 14-year-old kid did this.
He was using, like, physical resources that regular people don't have, that you only tap into when you're in that fight or flight
fight, right,
mode,
like
you know?
Lifting the car to save
exactly,
the baby.
Exactly,
right?
And that must do something to you.
Of course.
You know? But, like, Mike, I mean, all through his life now, he's struggling with addiction to alcohol and to drugs.
Sure.
And, you know, he like—
Going to rehab and being in recovery.
And it robs him. He says he went to rehab 7 times. It robs him of every dream he had. He wanted to be a rodeo guy, a cowboy
yeah.
like his daddy. He was well on his way. Everybody loved this guy and his life just fell apart.
Yeah. So the kidnappers have parole hearings every 5 years. And there it was someone that was on this bus. Her name is Jody.
Jody Huffington. She was 10. She's one of the older kids.
And she goes to that parole hearing every single time.
Yeah.
And she was one of the older kids. And so she was comforting
yeah.
some of the older kids, you know,
yeah.
10.
At 10,
but,
yeah.
you know, comforting the other children. And she was holding a flashlight for Ed and Mike the Cowboy
yeah.
as they were digging. And she was such an advocate for everyone after the fact, which is such a weight to have on when you're dealing with your own stuff. And now now you're fighting for 25 other kids.
And she's the one that, like, it was her and Linda that were the ones that would go to every parole hearing. They would
drive hours.
Yes, and we learned.
It was on the victims to fight for them to be in jail. If they had not been going to parole hearings, they'd have been out in probably 1980-something.
Without the work of Jody and Linda going to the parole hearings every single time, they would have gotten out much sooner.
Yeah. And also, it's just, like, if you think about what they're being asked to do, Larry also goes to the meetings a lot, too. He says he's been asked to leave several times because he's gotten so worked up, which is, like,
which would be
great.
Me, for sure.
But it's like, that's what they're asking these people to do. They're asking these people to have on your calendar a countdown to every 5 years where you have to go and relive this trauma and hope that someone thinks it's bad enough.
Yes.
Like, think about what you're making these people do.
I know.
And it's when you, they're already thinking back to what happened to them. They're trying to navigate the moment, but they're in their mental calendar, every day is closer to when they have to say it all out loud.
Totally.
And convince you that it matters.
Yeah, it's true. And they do it, they do it every single time. And then by 2010, the kidnappers have been denied parole for decades.
Yeah.
But somehow, some way, some reason, in 2010, there starts to be public support for the kidnappers getting parole.
To say, like, well, no one was, like, physically hurt.
The person who says it is Gavin Newsom's dad. Gavin Newsom is the governor of California, probably our next president after Joe Biden.
Oh, shit.
And, like, his dad, who's an appellate court judge, is saying nobody was hurt. That's a huge factor in this case.
Nobody was physically hurt.
Nobody was physically
hurt. And he makes a point to say physically hurt.
He's like, let these fucking perpetrators out of prison. I do not understand it.
And it's also, like, this isn't a major accident that happened and, like, through no fault of their own and now they're here and, like, yes, there's trauma there, but there was a plan.
Yes.
It took them 18 months. They built a bunker. They buried, a lot. Like, this wasn't just,
No, these people should rot in prison for the rest of their lives. But now we learn Dale Four, who was one of the lead investigators trying to hunt these kidnappers down. He's now on the side of let them out. And what's happening here, remember, the Woods family is, like, the richest family in the state.
Yeah.
And they're all on the Woods family payroll.
But this guy, this is the other, like, when you go through trauma and then there's, like, betrayal on top of it, you never get over it. It changes everything. So, like, this guy,
he was one of the people who assured us that none of the kidnappers would ever get out.
He started working for Fred Woods' team. He knew many of the survivors, and at times he approached them and offered them money to come and support parole and to change their position.
The Woods family is also actively recruiting survivors, like the kids that were down there in the bunker, offering them money.
And one of them flips.
And one of them flips.
She takes the money.
We do need to legally say that attorneys for the Woods family say that no money was ever offered to anybody. But but Linda's here to say, like, no, they offered it to me directly. And I said I couldn't be bought.
And also, you know, Larry, who ends up being a pastor, but he says, you know, he was down there with his sister. And Larry goes, I went through it. I served some prison time. Like, I don't know what these people's lives are. Maybe it was an amount of money that she couldn't deny.
100%.
I don't know, but it does feel like such a betrayal now. But it's also just like, okay, so money matters more than what I went through down there.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a ripple effect of what they did.
Well, and it's also like, if this happened today, these people all would have gone to prison and they would have gotten sued by the survivors.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they didn't get sued by the survivors, being that they were, like, billionaires.
Right. But it's also like, who has the emotional time and energy to go through that? They're just trying to get through the day.
But so then, starting in 2012, the kidnappers all get released.
Yeah, so Rick the hanger-on is released first.
Yep.
And Linda is like, and that's when the panic attack started again, knowing that one of them was out.
Yep, Jody Heffington basically dies of guilt, feeling like it's all her fault that the kidnappers are getting out.
Yeah.
She dies at the age of 55 in 2021.
Yep, she sinks into a major depression. She wasn't eating. She was drinking all the time.
Yes.
Fred Woods, like, the guy, his dad was, like, the richest guy in town. He's a little bit of a different story.
Yes.
Because he was doing a lot of shit he wasn't supposed to do in prison. Like,
he was conducting businesses. He was running a Christmas tree farm, to which I said, how dare you bring Christmas into this?
Taylor Swift grew up on a Christmas tree farm.
She did?
She has a song about it.
Oh, my God.
So, it's fine.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
We're kindred.
I know.
December birthdays. Anyway,
I know.
So, but Fred, remember the two vans?
Yes.
The green van and the white van?
Yep.
Fred, for some reason, is in possession
of the vans.
Of these two vans. And he is like, oh, the value's going to increase exponentially because of the notoriety.
Yes. And, like,
Fred?
We learn, too, that, like, he's running all these businesses from jail, keeping the kidnapped vans for the money that he's going to make off them at some point. His family left him $100 million when they died.
$100 million?
He did not need the money.
He's just a piece of shit. It's not about the money. He's just a piece of shit.
Yes.
So in 2022, there's another parole hearing for Fred Woods. And the survivors, who are still mourning Jody, by the way, Jody, who was at the forefront of going to these parole hearings, driving hours and hours with Linda, being a mouthpiece for the crew, many of them speak, not on behalf of her, but on behalf of all of them, fighting for him to not get parole. Guess what? He's released on parole.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Lenore is just saying,
Dr. Tare once called the children little pioneers of medicine because they so helped in the understanding of childhood trauma.
They paved the way for us to understand more contemporary things. What happens when you force children away from their parents at a border? What happens to children at some of these horrible school shootings?
We know more about childhood trauma. Like, what happens when you separate kids and parents at the border?
I mean,
or like our school shootings or mass shootings, just like at a concert. Like, this is affecting everyone, but with kids.
Larry says to us that they now, like, they had counselors the following day after the Columbine shooting
because of
the Chowchilla kids.
And that study and that report that Dr. Lenore did.
Yes.
Like, they're heroes. They continue to teach us every single day about childhood trauma 50 years after the fact, especially when it's not addressed right away.
Yeah.
When your parents are told, let them cry it out in their bedroom. Like, don't fucking do that. And Linda is a teacher in Chowchilla.
She teaches at the school where, like, where the kidnapping happens.
Yeah. Jennifer is like, I'm working on this every day. Like, she's a work in progress. Larry is a pastor, and he says,
I never gave up, not completely, because I was taught at 6 years old by a 14-year-old boy, you don't give up, you keep digging.
At 6 years old, I was taught by a 14-year-old boy, you just keep digging.
And he said, seen Mike. He's talking about Mike, and he hadn't seen him since 1977, and they have a reunion on the sidewalk, and Larry is beside himself.
And Mike is like, because they're hugging and they're crying, and Mike is a hero.
Yeah.
And it's like, after all this time, Mike is hearing these words that he's like, feels guilty for maybe wanting to hear a little bit.
Yes.
And like, Larry's saying it to him, and they're like healing, and it's awkward, but it's like so sweet.
Yes.
And Mike is in recovery. And he goes, once a cowboy, always a cowboy. It's in your heart.
Oh,
just keep digging,
just
everyone.
Keep digging.
Dear listener, just keep digging.
Oh,
you got
that's
this.
So good. Just
keep digging, right? We got this.
Oh my God, girl, we did Chowchilla.
So good, right?
It was really, really,
really good.
Really good. So strongly recommend this documentary if you all are looking for something to watch.
And it's great to know that, like, we know that they, at the very least, get out.
Yes,
you know? That was good to know.
Hey, fam, here's something new. I think you should follow us on our social media. Because our social media manager, Aaron, makes all of these amazing videos of our funny moments in the booth. So, like anything funny from the episode that you've seen, Aaron pulls it, makes a really funny video out of it. On TikTok and Instagram, we're True Crime Obsessed Podcast.
Yeah.
So follow us there. I'm Patrick Hines _ on both, and you are Jillian with a G.
Yeah, I get all spelled out like that. WITHAG.
With a G.
With a G. Wit hag or whatever you want to call it.
What are we doing next, girl?
Oh, boy. Sex Lies in the College Cult, about the Sarah Lawrence thing.
Oh, right.
It's on Hulu.
Yes. All right. Stay
major.
Tuned for the trailer. We've talked about it briefly, but I don't really know what I'm in for with this.
You're in for so much.
Really?
Like, it's going to be a 3-hour.
That's her, like, off-mic voice, fam. She's like, no, girl, like, you
no,
really don't know.
Like, no, but so much. So much. I have, like, texts from my dad to read about
them.
Oh, my
God,
like, it's crazy.
Really?
This is crazy.
All right. Stay tuned for the trailer for that and then our funny and hilarious outtakes.
All right. We love you.
We love you.
See you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Who is Larry Ray? Nobody really knows.
Larry Ray is a multifaceted human being. A lot of political connections. His perfect dad. Larry Ray now is accused of running a sex cult for over a decade.
It was about using sex as sort of a tool to destabilize them, make them uncomfortable. It was a tactic.
His entire world was based on a fraud.
Clearly, something wrong is being done to her by this guy.
He's creating a whole new reality, which is what most cults end up doing. They just couldn't take it anymore.
A former employee of that quarry, which, how do you say that word? Quarry,
but I feel we're in Orange, Florida territory where I'm going to get in trouble for saying quarry.
No, it's a rock quarry, but saying the word quarry without putting rock in front of it was really hard for me.
It feels wrong.
I was like, quarry.
The quarry.
As a member of the queer community, it's a quarry.
Queer
it's
community.
A story. All right. Okay. Are you an amusement park person?
I can be. Kids love amusement parks.
Yeah, you don't love kids. You're very nice to kids, but you don't like love kids.
If I'm going to go have fun, I'm not going to walk into a place where I'm going to be surrounded by screaming children because I want to go have fun.
Would
you know
go like on like an adults only night?
Sure.
Have you
I am adults only. Like I'll only go on vacation if it's an adults only.
You know, I got to tell you, like, no notes. No notes.
Oh, yeah?
As, like, a parent who is surrounded by children at all times, your life of, like, no children vacations and, like, adult-only resorts is amazing.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And it's not like, oh, there's a kid in this restaurant, I'm not going. I'm not, like, the witch under the bridge,
no, nobody
everybody.
Thinks you are. Like, a direct equivalent is, like, when we go on a gay cruise to get away from straight people.
There you go.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
You know what I mean?
You know what?
I want to come back to straight people at some point, but I would like a week without them sometimes.
Yeah. If I'm drinking a Mai Tai at 11 o'clock in the morning.
No kids, no straight people.
I don't want to hear someone screaming.
No. Is it a straight person or child?
Like, honestly. I'm dealing with my husband. He's enough straight. That's the only straighty I need in my life.